Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're cracking open an old case file, really. Something packed with documented evidence. A mystery so, well, so strange that officials apparently spent, what, over 70 years trying to bury it.
That's right. Just dismissal and silence.
Yeah. We're talking about the great Zaza, a stage magician, 19th century, whose his final trick wasn't just smoke and mirrors. It seems it was a genuine, massive disappearance. Yeah. All triggered by one simple instruction.
It's chilling when you frame it like that.
So go deep into the specifics. 1891, New York City. What actually happened on that stage? Because, I mean, listen to this. This is the core shock, isn't it? A famous illusionist, final trick, boom, 1,600 people, gone, vanished from a packed theater.
Completely vanished.
And then you fast forward decades, right? Yeah. 1963. A film crew miles away, Antarctica of all places, they find them, frozen. The entire audience.
Frozen solid. It's almost unbelievable.
Okay, let's unpack this.
It really is a classic cold case, isn't it? You've got these two incredibly different points in time and space. Gaslit New York, peak theater era.
Right.
And then the absolute desolate cold of Antarctica. So our mission today, really, is to get past the ghost stories, the urban legend side of it.
Yeah, stick to the facts.
Exactly. We're sticking to the timeline, the actual evidence, the receipts, you could say, found in the primary documents, the ones dealing with this mass disappearance.
That specific term, yeah.
We want to figure out how a magic show essentially became this global forensic puzzle, an archive almost.
Okay, so to get the scale of it, the shock, we need to picture the scene first. Late 1800s, New York. Magic wasn't just kids' parties back then, was it?
Oh, absolutely not. It was huge. Peak public entertainment. You know, this was their blockbuster movie, their special effects extravaganza, a real cultural force.
And Zaza was right at the top.
A titan. Yeah. And importantly, he wasn't just doing card tricks or pulling rabbits out of hats. His whole reputation, the sources make this really clear, was built on scale.
Okay. Scale how?
He was known specifically for making large things disappear. Every night, we're talking like full-sized horses, maybe heavy carriages, big complicated props. Poof. Gone.
Gone from the stage.
Gone from the stage and maybe reappearing somewhere else, or at least that's what the audience thought was happening.
Hmm. That focus on large disappearances, that feels significant, right?
Hell.
What does that imply about where his head was at before this final show? Was he just a really ambitious showman, or was he, I don't know, sort of practicing something else?
Well, it changes how you think about his power, doesn't it? If making something huge, like a wagon, disappear was just another Tuesday for him.
Right. It's routine.
Then maybe vanishing 1,600 people didn't seem like such a leap. Maybe it was just the next logical step, the ultimate large object.
So the audience was just the biggest prop.
In a way, yeah. It suggests he was pretty confident that his existing methods, whatever they were, could handle it. It wasn't necessarily a different kind of trick, just the biggest version of what he already did. The grand finale, literally.
And he definitely set the stage for that. November 7th, 1891. That's the date the documents lock in. He gets this huge crowd, over 1,600 people.
More than 1,600.
And tells everyone, very publicly, very dramatically, this is it, my final performance.
He really built the hype, maximum expectation.
That whole retirement announcement, it creates this perfect storm, doesn't it? High drama. Everyone feels like they're part of history.
Exactly. Zaza's last bow.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably ready to do anything he asks, follow any instruction, just to be part of that final amazing illusion.
Okay. So we've got the who, the where, the when, the setup. Now let's get into act two, the actual event, the mechanism.
Yeah.
And let's stick close to the evidence, the receipts from the archives.
The moment itself.
It's disturbingly simple, the instruction he gave. Stands up there, 1,600 faces looking at him. And he gives the command.
Yeah, the trick. It was, well, almost deceptively basic. Targeted that collective psychology, you know? He just told the entire audience, close your eyes, count to 10. No complex chanting, no weird devices visible. Nope. Just a simple shared action, obedience.
Let's dig into that instruction for a second. Closing your eyes. Okay, standard magic misdirection, right? Makes you focus inward. But the counting. Everyone counting together. One, two, three. Why that?
Well, the counting does a couple of things, I think, besides just distracting them. First, it syncs everyone up, creates the shared internal rhythm. Imagine 1,600 minds all focused on the same simple sequence.
Like a critical mass.
Sort of, yeah. A critical mass of focused, but also, importantly, distracted consciousness. And second, it's about surrender, isn't it? By asking them to count to 10, he sets an expectation for the future. The big reveal happens at 10.
So they have to keep their eyes shut until...
Right. They have to maintain that state of vulnerability. They're basically handing over control, trusting him completely to define what happens next for those few seconds.
But here's the kicker. The first big piece of evidence. Receipt number one. They didn't get to 10, did they?
No. And this is where it shifts from just a clever trick to something else. The records are specific. The entire audience vanished before 9.
Before 9.
They didn't even say the word 9.
Okay, vanished before 9.
Yeah.
Just those three words. They blow almost every normal explanation out of the water, don't they? Trap doors, secret passages, smoke machines. None of that works that fast for 1,600 people.
Absolutely not. You'd hear something, see something. There'd be chaos, delays.
So how does a group that size vanish faster than you can even say a single number, like faster than taking a breath?
It points towards something instantaneous, a total displacement, maybe. You almost have to ditch the idea of a staged exit entirely.
The time constraint is the key.
It's the hard limit the eyewitness accounts put on it. Before 9, it suggests whatever Zaza did, it just needed that moment of vulnerability, that synchronized counting, and the effect was immediate. Total erasure from that spot.
The physics alone are baffling.
Right. For that much mass, 1,600 bodies, to leave that space in under a second, it implies something impossible, like an insane acceleration, or maybe it wasn't physical movement as we know it.
Okay, so if the audience vanished, who didn't? This leads us to the second piece of evidence, the witnesses. Who was left?
The theater workers. Stagehands, ushers, lighting guys, cleaner.
People working behind the scenes.
Exactly. They're the only eyewitnesses left. And the crucial detail from the archives is that they were not counting. They weren't part of the audience participation.
Why not?
Well, they were busy running the show, guarding exits, sweeping up. Their jobs meant they couldn't just stop, close their eyes, and count along with everyone else. They weren't following Zaza's command.
So if following the command was the trigger.
Then not following it, being professionally distracted, essentially.
Yeah.
That's what seems to have kept them there, saved them maybe.
And their testimony, what they told investigators that night, that's what links Zaza directly to the disappearance itself, right?
Yes. Crucially, the workers claimed they saw Zaza leaving the theater afterwards. And not casually. He was in a rush. Bolted out, basically, and then was never seen again. This is key because it shows Zaza didn't vanish with them. He set it off, and then he fled. He was the operator, not one of the victims.
Okay, hold on. Let me play devil's advocate here based on some of the secondary analyses. If Zaz is this master showman pulling off the ultimate trick, why run out the back door in a rush? Wouldn't he vanish himself in a puff of smoke? Doesn't fleeing seem messy, panicked even?
That's a really good point. And yeah, the initial investigators apparently debated that too. The source interpretations differ. Some frame it as panic, others as a calculated escape. But either way, the essential fact is he left immediately, separated himself from the scene.
So the rush wasn't necessarily panic that the trick worked.
But maybe urgency, because he knew what had happened. He knew 1,600 people were permanently gone, and he needed to get away before the questions started, before the authorities arrived.
He knew it wasn't just an illusion.
It seems likely. The testimony puts him on the run instantly. He went from magician to fugitive in the space of that countdown.
He got away. But you can't just hide 1,600 missing people. Yet somehow... this didn't become the defining mystery of the 1890s. Which brings us to the third point, the cover-up. 72 years of near silence.
Yeah, this period is almost as strange as the event itself. 72 years. And the sources use that exact phrase. The incident was brushed under the rug, minimized by officials.
Minimize? How do you minimize 1,600 people vanishing from a major New York theater?
Well, you can't admit what actually seemed to happen, right?
Yeah.
Authorities back then couldn't say, a magician made them disappear instantly. We don't know how. That would cause mass panic.
So they needed a different story.
Yeah.
Plausible deniability.
Exactly. They likely pushed narratives they could manage. Maybe mass hysteria. Maybe some kind of accidental poisoning from the gaslights causing hallucinations or illness. Some archived memos apparently even floated ideas like a building collapse.
Even though there was no rubble.
Right. Or maybe suggesting they all just decided to emigrate together, coordinated somehow to escape poverty. Anything but the truth.
Anything's but magic or impossible physics.
The goal was to shift it from a single, inexplicable event to something regrettable, yes, but sort of understandable within the chaos of 19th century city life. The real fear wasn't just Zaza. It was the public realizing that the people in charge had absolutely no control or explanation for something like this.
So the cover-up wasn't about hiding the fact that people were missing that was impossible.
No, it was about hiding the how, hiding the instantaneous total nature of it. They had to make it seem like normal, albeit tragic, human behavior, not what it seemed to be.
Turn it into a spooky story.
Pretty much. And 72 years is long enough for witnesses to pass away, memories to fade, for the whole thing to become this weird urban myth. The sheer effort involved in silencing that many families, quashing press reports for decades, it tells you how terrifying the actual event must have seemed to the authorities.
And they almost got away with it, almost buried it.
They did succeed for nearly three generations, until the ICE decided to talk.
Which takes us out of the dusty archives of old New York and into the freezing winds of 1963 Antarctica. This is Act Three, where the physical evidence changes everything.
The second anchor date, 1963. Totally different world, different place.
Thousands of miles south. Most remote place on Earth, practically. Who found them? And why were they even looking?
They weren't looking. That's the incredible part. It was pure chance. A film crew. They were shooting a documentary about Antarctica, doing an ice field survey.
Just filming scenery.
Looking for dramatic shots of glaciers and ice, yeah. And instead, they stumble across, well, this horrific site, this frozen anomaly.
Okay, but why Antarctica? The sources seem to suggest the location wasn't random. Does the ice revealing the bodies 72 years later tell us something about how they vanished?
It strongly suggests Zaza's trick wasn't just making them invisible or hiding them backstage. It seems it was a massive, instantaneous relocation, a geographical transfer.
From a warm theater to...
to literally the polar opposite. Extreme cold, extreme remoteness. Antarctica makes sense if the mechanism, let's say, defaulted to the most isolated, least likely place for discovery. It implies Zaza triggered a displacement, but maybe didn't fully control the destination. Or maybe he did, intending it as a storage location.
And what they found wasn't just the audience.
No. This is the detail that locks it all together. The film crew found the frozen remains of the audience, yes, but the site also contained the frozen remains of every person, animal, or item that Zaza ever made disappear.
Wait, everything?
Everything mentioned in the performance records attributed to his vanishings.
So, remember you said he was famous for vanishing large animals and props.
Exactly. Huh. This discovery confirms those weren't just clever illusions where the horse was hidden behind a curtain. Those animals, those carriages, those props, they were actually sent somewhere. And they ended up in the same place as the 1,600 people from his final show.
So the sources explicitly mention finding animals and props too.
Yes. Which means, theoretically, the elephant he supposedly vanished in, say, 1888, or the carriage from 1885, they were right there, perfectly preserved in the ice, alongside the audience members from 1891.
Wow. It's like a frozen museum of his entire career.
It really is. The very act of erasure, the vanishing, created the evidence that was eventually found. The ice acted as the perfect, albeit horrifying, archive.
The erasure became the evidence. That's quite a thought. Okay, let's focus on the state they were found in frozen. What does that specific detail tell us forensically about the transfer itself?
The fact they were frozen solid is huge. It rules out any possibility they traveled there slowly or died from gradual exposure over time.
Because you'd see signs of struggle. Decomposition.
Exactly. Signs of hypothermia setting in, maybe attempts to shelter. Instead, the implication is they went from a warm, probably 60, 70 degree Fahrenheit theater.
Right. Indoor New York in November.
To Antarctic sub-zero temperatures. Instantly. The transfer must have been so fast they were essentially flash frozen the moment they arrived. No time to react, no time to decay.
Preserved perfectly at the moment of arrival.
Which must have been just moments after they vanished before 9, while Zaza was making his escape.
It paints this picture of an instantaneous switch. 1 second, warm theater, counting. The next, lethal cold, frozen in time.
It's the ultimate grim time capsule of that single second. And that discovery, it completely changed the game. It dragged the Zaza incident out of the realm of myth and rumor, out of the official cover-up.
And slammed it down as a documented event. With physical proof.
Undeniable proof. All those efforts by officials to minimize it for 72 years, suddenly meaningless, because a film crew found the bodies. It really was the trick that wouldn't stay buried.
So what are the stakes here then? What does this physical evidence mean for how we understand Zaza and what he was doing?
Well, it means he wasn't just a magician in the theatrical sense. He was tapping into something else. Principles of physics we maybe still don't understand. Displacement. Maybe something to do with consciousness itself. He found a way to move mass instantly across vast distances.
But maybe not perfectly. The destination seems unfortunate.
That's the question, isn't it? Did he control the trigger, the command, the counting, but lose control of the destination? Or was Antarctica always the dumping ground, and he just couldn't bring them back this time? The frozen state is the final receipt. Whatever happened, it was incredibly fast and incredibly lethal.
It really comes back to that moment of trust, doesn't it? Close your eyes, count to 10. Just agreeing to that, participating.
Yeah.
That was the key to becoming part of this frozen archive.
It seems the mechanism wasn't chemical or mechanical. It was rooted in participation, human compliance.
Let's circle back to that compliance idea for a second. You mentioned the theory that maybe he just needed that critical mass of minds focused inward. Is there anything in the documents suggesting he meant to send them there permanently? Or was it a trick gone wrong?
Well, him fleeing suggests he knew something irreversible had happened. Whether Antarctica was the intended final destination is harder to say. But the fact that all his vanished items ended up there, that suggests a consistency, doesn't it?
Like it was always the storage space.
Possibly. Maybe he knew where they went, but this time, with 1,600 people, something went wrong with the parameters. He couldn't reprieve them. Or maybe he never intended to. We can't know for sure.
But the workers were safe.
The workers were safe. Because they didn't participate. Their attention was external, focused on their jobs, grounded in the immediate physical reality of the theater, the audience. Their attention was internal, trusting, compliant, vulnerable.
That really was the dividing line. Stayed in New York 1891 or ended up frozen, found in 1963.
It seems so. The compliance was the difference.
So pulling it all together, the frozen bodies, the 72-year gap, the discovery, it basically reframes Zsasz's entire career, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't just performing tricks. He was maybe unknowingly building this collection, an archive of displaced things and people just waiting in the coldest storage imaginable.
It's a story with two failures, really. Zsasz's failure, perhaps, to fully control the power he accessed, and the failure of the authorities for decades to face a reality that just didn't fit their worldview. The ice kept the secret until someone else, the film crew, accidentally brought it to light.
A chilling summary. Okay, so the one-line takeaway. The great Zsasz's final trick turned a New York stage into an unsolved cold case solved 72 years later by the Antarctic ice.
That sums it up pretty well.
And the timeline, just to recap the anchors, 1891, New York. Over 1,600 people vanish before 9 after following Zsasz's command.
Zsasz flees, seen only by the theater workers who didn't participate. Then, 72 years of official minimization, a cover-up.
Until 1963, Antarctica. A film crew finds the frozen remains of the audience, plus all the animals and props Zsasz ever vanished.
Confirming that instant, massive geographical displacement.
Defined by the count, and then the freeze. Okay, before we wrap up, you mentioned a provocative thought earlier.
Right. Just something to think about. We assume the mechanism moved the people, but consider the witnesses, the theater workers. They were exempt because they didn't follow the command. What if the trigger, that collective compliance, didn't move the audience out of the theater?
What else could it do?
What if it moved the theater itself, or at least the space containing the people who were complying? Maybe the compliance created some kind of dimensional shift, and the workers were just standing outside the affected zone when it happened.
So the audience didn't travel. The piece of reality they occupied did.
And Antarctica was just the default destination when that reality snapped back or failed to return properly. The compliance wasn't just a distraction. It was the key to shifting their location fundamentally.
That is. Yeah, that's a disturbing thought to leave people with. The stage itself moved. Wow. Okay, well, if you listening want to dig into the nitty-gritty, the specific reports, the timeline details, all the receipts we've based this on.
They are available. The full timeline, the primary documents we've discussed.
Yeah. Full timeline plus receipts at Inspector Story. Thank you for diving deep with us today.